little bit longer and do special music for us. So appreciate that very much, and the time and the effort that goes into preparation to sing for us. It is no small thing, and those of you who have the talent and ability to do that for us, it's always appreciated. As human beings, every one of us has been involved in conflict. If you're human, and you don't live in a cave by yourself, and you live with somebody else, and you're around other people, you have been in conflict. All of us have. If you're married, believe it or not, you've probably been in conflict. There have been times. The question is, how does one handle conflicts? We've been in conflict sometimes with other church members. Sometimes we're in conflict with others that are outside the church. Conflict is just part of life. And the challenge is, how do we deal with it? How do we deal with it? And we might ask ourselves, as we think about conflict, am I a person who is open to others discussing with me their thoughts, their concerns, their problems, their fears, their worries? Am I a person who's open to that? It's been said that the two most important aspects of human relationships are these: understanding each other and dealing effectively with misunderstandings between two people. I'll repeat that. The two most important aspects of human relationships are these: understanding each other and dealing effectively with misunderstandings between two people. In today's sermon, my purpose is to present a number of different backdrops regarding how to interact with other people in difficult circumstances, difficult situations that involve conflict. Matthew 18 is the basic premise from which we operate. But how do you apply that? What are some things to think about as you use that particular section of Scripture and apply it in your life? And I've entitled my sermon here, Dealing with Conflict. So how do we deal with difficult situations in which we find ourselves in conflict with others? In conflicts with other human beings, we realize they will arise. It's just part of life. And the question is, I don't want to ever have any conflicts, but that's not reality. Conflicts come your way regardless, and usually when conflicts come our way, there's sin involved at some place in most cases. And as we deal with other people, mistakes are made. We've all made them, but what we want to do is see how maybe we can avoid some of those. So how do we deal with the conflict? How do we resolve them? Well, and the important thing about resolving conflict is, as you resolve conflict, it makes your marriage better. If you resolve conflicts on the job, it makes the workplace better. And if we resolve conflicts in the church, it makes the church better. It makes it a more peaceful place, doesn't it? It brings health to a congregation. It brings health to the church as a whole. And I would say, looking at the current circumstances, we could definitely use some conflict resolution as a church, and hopefully we will be able to achieve that. It's my belief that the steps we are going to address today will help us to better apply Matthew 18 among ourselves and among others. These are principles that will work in the church and out. They'll help you with parenting and all the relationships in which we find ourselves involved. As we think about the world around us, is it a world that is filled with conflict? Absolutely. All you have to do is turn on the news, and it is nothing but conflict. Conflict on every level, politically, throughout your state, your city, your town, your village. There's conflict everywhere you look. I remember that in Bell, California, interestingly, all of the citizens are up in arms there because they believe that the officials of the city are making too much money. So they're all in there outraged, yelling at these officials because they're making too much money, and the officials are up there trying to justify why they deserve $800,000 for being the mayor of the city. And you're like, wait a minute, congressmen don't make that much. I'm not sure they deserve what they're getting, but anyway, for the job they're doing. But there's conflict at every level that you look. And it seems that there is more stress, more anger, more division than ever before. Now, why do you think that might be? You know, as you look at the Bible, it tells us that there is a time coming, and it makes you wonder if it's already here, when Satan will be cast down. And he knows that his time is short, and when he knows that his time is short and he's cast down, then he's going to redouble his efforts to stir things up in the world and to create all sorts of havoc in the world and in the church. And I would say that he's doing a rather good job of it. I was talking to somebody this week, and they said, well, I think we give Satan too much credit. And I was thinking, as he said that, I don't think we give him enough for his ability to stir up trouble and to create dissension and conflict. He's good at it. He is good at it. And so we have to realize that conflict exists, and it is something that we have to realize that it is coming. If it isn't in our lives now, it will come, and we've got to figure out how to deal with it. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 3 and look at our biblical mandate here. This gives us an overall starting point to look at this subject. 1 Peter chapter 3. First Peter chapter 3, and let's begin in verse 10. Now, the verses we're looking at here, beginning in verse 10, are a quote from another part of the Bible, because they're in my Bible, they're in italics, but they're still most applicable. It says, "For he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit." That's really a good thing, to keep your tongue from evil and to avoid speaking deceit. I think if we all did that, we'd be doing really well. I would say that in the church at this particular time, people are not refraining their tongues from evil, and I think there is some deceit that is going on. Exactly where, I don't know. But it's something I've been thinking about today since about 4:30. So anyway, that's the sad plight we find ourselves in. It says in verse 11, let him turn away from evil. So once you, if you recognize it, turn away from it. Quit doing it and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. Seek peace and pursue it. If you're pursuing something, what does that mean? You're running after it. You're chasing it down. Is that how we are in the church at this point? Are we seeking peace to the point where we're willing to pursue it, to chase after it? Now, why should we do that? Does it matter? It says in verse 12, "For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous." So God's watching out for us, but God's also watching us. God's also watching us. We've talked about in the context of the two witnesses that it talks about measuring the temple, and it talks about measuring the people who worship therein. That's all of us. That's you and me. We're being measured. And what's taking place with the conflict that exists in the church, that's all measuring us. How are we going to deal with it? What are we going to do? How are we going to react to it? It says, "For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers." Yes, he's watching over us. He hears our prayers. And I think that our prayers are needed. If you didn't read the letter from Mr. Luker at this point, it asks that we would all fast the weekend, sometime on the weekend of April, I think, 21st and 22nd. Excuse me. I know it's an A month. It's August, okay? So it'd be a lot of planning between now and April. So it's August 21st and 22nd. Okay, anyway, God is open to our prayers. And you know what? Our resolution to the problem that we are facing, the conflicts, I think, is going to take a major portion of God's Spirit and our willingness to yield to it. But it also tells us here, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. So God is, his eyes are on the righteous, his ears are open to our prayers, but God's not real pleased with those who do evil. And it's not impossible for people in the church to do evil. as we well know. So we want to be pleasing to God, and we want to apply the principles we see here to love life and to see good days and to watch our tongues, which is sometimes very hard to do. And we want to do good, we want to seek peace, and we want to pursue it earnestly. So what we realize here, if we're not turning away from evil, if we're not turning away from evil and not seeking peace, then in all likelihood, we're not doing what's right. In all likelihood, we're producing evil. And it's hard to think of it in those terms, but it's reasonable to assume from what Peter is saying. So in the midst of sin and upset, our responsibility is first and foremost not to add to the sin. We have conflict in the church today because of sin. And remember, Proverbs 13 tells us that by pride comes nothing but strife or contention. So if you're prideful and you're arrogant and all of that, you're going to have contention. Because you are unwilling to compromise. You're unwilling to admit wrong. You're unwilling to make the changes that maybe are necessary in order to better the situation. And think about the conflicts that you have been in. Have you ever stubbornly refused to try to make it better? I'm not giving in on this. I have, and you probably have too. Usually in most of the conflicts I'm in, I'm not going to give in right away. So, but usually overnight, something happens and I'll be willing to say I'm sorry or I was wrong and try to better the situation. But it's hard for me to do it just immediately. But eventually God in His mercy helps me to change, and that's what we all have to face. There comes a point where you have to say, I'm sorry, or I was wrong, or how can we work this out? And usually it takes not only you saying that, but the other person too. And usually if you take that approach, the other person will come to you. Now, there are people that won't do that. Basically, they expect you to grovel and admit all the wrongdoing, but they're not giving in. And that makes it really hard to try to better the situation. You know, when you know they're not going to move, it's hard even as a Christian, to do the right thing. It's hard for me. But, you know, as you talk to somebody and they say, you know, they're repentant and they're willing to meet you halfway, it's easier to do, isn't it? But when they're like, no way, I'm digging my heels in, you take all the hit. Well, that's harder to do. But when it's a mutual thing, it does make it easier. You know, and as we look at conflict in our individual relationships or in the church, is this an unusual situation? The Church of God has never sinned before. We've never had any problems during the entire history of the church until the last year or two. I wish that were the case, but that's not the case. This isn't a sudden case of sin. Sin is all too common to human beings, even in those in whom God's Spirit dwells. And since sin is present, humility is required, not pride. And repentance is required, not a turning around of the individual, and change is required. And in the midst of sin and upset, our responsibility is not to make it worse, not to add to it. Our responsibility is to seek peace, to run after it, to chase it down, to pursue it, to make it happen to the best of our ability. But you might say, well, wait a minute, what about these other guys? You know, the Apostle Peter said, you know, when Christ was taking care of everything at the end of his life there in John chapter 21, Peter said, well, what about John? You know, you told me what's going to happen to me. Well, what about him? What about that other guy? What did Christ tell Peter? Well, in John chapter 21, verse 21, Christ told Peter, Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, but Lord, what about this man? Jesus said to him, if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me. So he's saying, you know what, don't worry about John. Your job is to follow me. And what John's doing really is irrelevant to the issue. You are to follow me. So you know what Bob and Ray and Betty and Jane are all doing is irrelevant. It's what you're doing. That's what he's telling you. It's up to you as an individual what you do. And what other people do really doesn't matter. You have to do what's right. You have to pursue peace. You have to do the right things. So we're all responsible for ourselves, not responsible for anybody else. Well, they're doing this. Well, okay. Don't you be doing it if they're not supposed to be. You do what's right. So let's think about some guidelines for dealing with conflict based on Matthew 18. So for those of you who are counting, there are eight. That way you'll know where we're at. So the first guideline is this: communication is a good thing. Communication is a good thing. And, you know, as you think about communication being a good thing, good communication is the best form of communication you have. Good communication. But what happens if you have bad communication? You know, people don't handle it right, say the wrong thing, they are malicious, they're angry, whatever it is. Well, you know what? Communication, whether it's good or bad, is still a good thing. Because at least if they're communicating, even if it's bad, at least they're communicating, and maybe you can work from there to resolve the problems. Holding things in and keeping it to yourself does have its place. There's a time to keep your mouth shut. There's a time when you don't want to be communicating. And it's better to handle the situation on your knees, to go individually to God and ask God about it. And many, many issues we can work through that way. We don't have to communicate. We can deal with it on that level between us and God. But there are some things that we do need to go further than that. There are things that we have to communicate because they'll never be resolved otherwise. At times, there is no substitute for getting together and talking with each other face to face. Sitting down with them and looking them in the eye and talking to them about whatever it is that's going on. You can see their expressions, they can see your expressions, and you can talk it through. I would always, if there's a serious issue to be discussed, I would always rather talk to somebody in person. That's not for email, that's not for Facebook, that's for communication face-to-face. The phone, that's okay, but I don't like the phone because you can't see their face, and it's really not as intimate as it should be. It's good to get together. Now, sometimes you can't, but if you can get together and hash it out face-to-face, that's the best way to do it. Oh, and open discussion is time-consuming. It's often fraught with challenges, but it is the thing that needs to happen. And in this process, we will often hear things with which we disagree. But hearing people out not only increases the likelihood that we'll acquire important information that we didn't know before, but it will help us to understand and therefore help us to make a better decision. Now, let's look at some conflict. Surprisingly, the Bible has examples of conflict. Let's go to Galatians and let's look at a conflict. Galatians chapter 2. So this conflict is between the Apostle Peter and the Apostle Paul. Now, knowing something about those two individuals, should we be surprised that they would be in conflict? Peter's the guy that's impetuous, the guy that jumps out of the boat. He's the guy that whips out the sword and hacks off Malchus's ear. He's a guy that acts and thinks later. He speaks and thinks later. Oops, I shouldn't have said that. But that's how Peter was. And the Apostle Paul, think about him. He's the guy that gets credentials from the high priest, and he's out as an enemy of the church seeking to destroy the church. And he's gung-ho and charging from town to town and village to village, hunting down those Christians. He's a pretty strong-willed individual. I mean, Anybody that can be stoned in a city and get right back up and walk in there, that's a strong individual, okay? I'd probably be moving on to the next place, okay? I wouldn't be going back in there, but he did. So we see these two strong personalities. And what we find happening here in Galatians 2 is that the Apostle Peter was eating with the Gentiles. He's eating with them. No problem. And then Barnabas and others from Jerusalem show up, and he stops eating with the Gentiles. Okay? So he stops eating with them. And so Paul looked at this, and he felt that this was unacceptable. And it wasn't something he could just go to God and pray about. It had to be dealt with. And now that was his perspective. So let's go to chapter 2 of Galatians, verse 11. Galatians chapter 2, verse 11. It says, "Now when Peter had come to Antioch, I withstood him to his face because he was to be blamed. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles, but when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrite with him, so that even Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy. They would not eat with the Gentiles. They were eating separate from them." So, verse 14, But when I saw that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter before them all, "If you, being a Jew, live in the manner of Gentiles and not as the Jews, why do you compel Gentiles to live as Jews?" So he confronted him. So this is wrong. It's hypocritical. So as you think about this, so this direct confrontation between two apostles is taking place, and then everybody else is there watching this. So let's think about what happened here. If you were to go through with a microphone and interview the people there, what do you think you would hear? Okay, let's think about it. Do you think they were supporters of the Apostle Peter? "Man, that Apostle Peter gives great sermons. He's always been faithful. He's always treated me right." And then what do we have? So they're going to say, "Yeah, Peter, you know, he did the right thing. He was being sensitive to those Jews and from Jerusalem. He didn't want to offend them. So he wasn't going to eat with the Gentiles because he was being sensitive. And he handled it just right." You think there could have been people that took that position? And then you have the supporters of the Apostle Paul. And they're going to say, "Man, the Apostle Paul," you know, the Peter supporters are going to say, "That Paul, he just went crazy and he's all over him and yelling and screaming. He totally mishandled it." And then the supporters of Paul, they're going to say, "You know what? He handled it just right. He was sensitive. He just handled it perfectly. Just exactly what was needed in the time." Now, as you think about the two parties there, and there are two parties, aren't there? Who's right here? Now, do you think Peter's supporters think he's right? How about Paul's? They both think they're right. Now, let's say you were from Corinth, and you were talking to these people that were at this confrontation, and you talk to a Peter supporter, and you talk to a Paul supporter. What do you think would happen? He says, "Well, I want you to tell me exactly what happened. What did you see? I want the truth." Well, listen to the Peter supporter and what happens. "Man, that sounds pretty good." Then you listen to the Paul supporter. "That sounds pretty good too." So who's right? Who do I support? Who do I support? It's hard to do. As you witness these things and you make these judgments. So what's the point for us? Many times we don't have the complete truth. We have versions of what happened. So we get all emotionally involved saying, "Well, I'm supporting this guy or that guy," and start choosing sides over a situation. Many times we don't know much about. Nonetheless, Paul did confront Peter. Was it a good confrontation? Interestingly, the Bible doesn't make any comment on that. It doesn't say whether God approved this or not. It doesn't say, "You know what? I approved of how Paul handled this. Exactly. He did it perfectly." There is no comment like that. All Paul does is lay out what happened. That's it. And why he did it. But there's no judgment of God there. So we see a statement of what happened, but not who was right or wrong. And regardless of whether Paul did things well or poorly, at least communication was flowing. Did Peter know how he felt? Absolutely. And maybe he didn't handle it right. That's where it may have been bad communication in the way he handled it. What he was saying was true, but sometimes you don't handle it right. But the point is, communication has taken place, and Peter knows Paul doesn't agree. So maybe we need to resolve this so that we handle it in a way that would please God. So it's very important. It's a most important thing to the trust and morale of God's people that as they have conflicts, they have an outlet for them to talk, that they have the opportunity to express sometimes their strongly held opinions and concerns. Should every expression be done in a godly way? We want good communication, not just communication, but good communication. Absolutely. And there's no justification for evil communication as a Christian. However, we suppress all opinions and thoughts and things like that, we make a serious mistake. Some of you here have expressed strong opinions about things over the years. Okay, I've been here 20 years, so I've noted that from time to time. So sometimes I've had to say, let's talk about this, and maybe you shouldn't be expressing that, you know, in this particular area. You need to do this privately, okay? So there's a better way to handle it. But obviously I know that there's a problem, okay? Sometimes with me, sometimes with other things going on in the church. But there's a problem, and if there's no outlet, you're going to find somebody to talk to. And if I'm going to suppress it, then guess what? You will find others to talk to, and eventually it will divide us. So that's why open communication is important, where we can talk it out. Now, I may not want to hear it, and I would rather suppress it, because in a way, that's easier. I'll beat it down, and we won't hear it. But that's not the answer. We have to work it out. So the bottom line here is communication is a good thing. We have to communicate. So if there's something on your mind, you need to communicate it. We need to work it through. You need to work it through in your marriage or your parenting or whatever facet of life, you got to work it through. You can't let it go. You can't just, if you can let it go and you can pray about it and work it out that way, fine. But there are some things you can't do to handle that way, and communication is a good thing. The second guideline to keep in mind is this. If we have a conflict, we need to take it seriously and handle it carefully. Now, if we're in conflict, from your perspective, is it a small conflict? It's really no big deal. What are you even bringing that up for? Now, me looking at it, I may say, I don't think that's a big deal. But if you're in conflict or you have the issue, guess what? It's a big deal to you. And the point is that there is no small conflict. That's something you have to keep in mind. You may think it's really not worth our time, but there is no small conflict. And you know what? Small conflicts have a way of becoming big conflicts. In fact, the end of the conflict, when you sometimes it becomes so big, if you try to trace it back to its spark, that little spark that got it started, you know what? You can't find it. I don't know how this got started. But man, it's a big deal now. You know, that little house that it started as a small fire, and then the next thing you know, the whole house is on fire and burning down. How did this start? Well, it was a candle. It was really small, but that's all it took. So it's hard, sometimes hard, even hard to put your finger on the precipitating action. Have you ever been in an argument with somebody that's really gotten out of hand? And when you really go back to it and you try to figure out what caused it, what started it, you're like, I really don't know. Have you ever had that happen? Or you're so ashamed of how small it started. That's how it happens sometimes. What we have to do is we have to take conflict seriously and handle it carefully. The primary goal of encouraging full communication is a positive one, to get information, to reinforce the idea throughout the church that we're open, we're candid, we're accountable. And we want to reduce the likelihood of potential negative consequences. So every conflict must be taken seriously and handled carefully. Let's look at a minor conflict, what could have been seen as a minor conflict, in Numbers chapter 27. Numbers chapter 27. Now, Numbers 27 talks about a bunch of women who had a problem. Now, if you were back in 1400 B.C., women didn't have much standing in society. Men were men, and they ruled the roost. And women, in many cases, were just like chattel. They were owned. They were slaves. They were the low person on the totem pole. I'm not saying that's right, but in that world, that's the way it was. So look, if they come with a complaint, look, girls, this is petty. You guys, we don't want to hear anything from a bunch of women. Now, you could say that, but that wouldn't be taking a problem seriously. But let's look at the problem, Numbers 27, verse 1. It says, then came the daughters of Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, the son of Gilead, the son of Maker, and all these other sons. And verse 2, and they stood before Moses, before Eleazar the priest, and before the leaders and all the congregation by the doorway of the tabernacle of meeting, saying. So here come these daughters, these women, and they come to the leaders of Israel. All guys. So we've got women bringing the issue up and all the guys there. They could have said, we're not going to listen to this. We're not even going to take it seriously. Get out. But what happened? They explain their situation in verse 3. Our father died in the wilderness, but he was not in the company of those who gathered together against the Lord, in company with Korah, but he died in his own sin, and he had no sons. So here are these ladies, and they didn't have. They weren't going to inherit because they had no sons. You know, their father had no sons, so their family was out. So they're like, well, this isn't really a fair situation. And in verse 4, why should the name of our father be removed from among his family because he had no sons? Give us a possession among our father's brother. Among our father's brothers. So they wanted a possession and asked for it, that they would be able to inherit their portion in the land. Now you could discount that. You could not take it seriously and say, tough luck, so what if that family dies out? But Moses took it seriously, and he brought the case, their case, before the Lord. And God said, you know, they're right. They should inherit. And they did. And all of you ladies are able to inherit property because of this, because many of our inheritance rules and laws stem from this section of Scripture. That's why you're able to inherit, because somebody saw what took place here and said, that's a good principle, and we will apply it among the English-speaking peoples. So you can thank the daughters of Zelophehad for your being able to inherit. Because if they hadn't done this, then you may not have been inheriting. It is a great blessing. But you can see here that in one way you could just say, who cares? But clearly Moses took it seriously and handled it carefully. And that's what we should do. So you may hear something that you think is trifling, something that is not significant, and I'm not going to waste my time on it. But every conflict, all of these issues have to be taken seriously and handled carefully. Just something for all of us to... So if your wife has a complaint or your husband has a complaint, maybe it would be good to listen and to pay attention and say, maybe I shouldn't consider this trifling. I think we all do from time to time. So consider it and handle it carefully. So that's the second point here, that every conflict is serious. The third guideline is this. We need to establish ground rules. We in the Church of God tend to have an extremely black and white perspective to the world. We tend to be black and white people. Somebody's made the comment that I'm a black and white kind of guy. They said that 15 years ago. So, not in this congregation, it's a minister, another minister said, I'm a black and white kind of guy, and I am. I mean, for the most part, that's the way I am. Things are either right or wrong, they're good or bad, they're righteous or evil. And there are some things that are that way, that are that cut and dried. Okay? And that's nice when it's that clear cut. But there are times, for instance, if somebody's going to preach to you something that is against God's law, what stance should you take? Well, I'm going to be kind of wishy-washy here. No, right is right and wrong is wrong. Good is good and bad is bad. There's no question there about good and evil. But we're talking about other things. Many other things aren't quite so clear-cut. Because every person and most every action and most every statement is often a mixture of good and evil, a mixture of truth and falsehood or misunderstanding. In any one conversation, I might be able to say a number of righteous things. But in the same conversation, I might say some stupid things. And I might say a few wrong things. Hopefully, I'm not saying anything that's unrighteous. Or as I'm speaking, it may be that I'm not giving the entire story. Has that ever happened? You're telling something, but you leave kind of a crucial part of it out. You're not telling the entire story. Or maybe you're just giving it from your perspective. But you know, when I give things from my perspective is always right. Have you ever felt my perspective is right? We all do. I saw it. I know what I saw. Well, so what we realize here is it's imperfect. And so ground rules are necessary. And the most important ground rule to understand in conflict is that reasonable people, including converted people, might disagree on issues and facts. You said A. I didn't say A. Well, yes, you did. I was there. I heard it with my own ears. Have you ever had that happen? You said this. Well, I didn't say that. And you're there trying to defend yourself. I don't think I said that. And knowing my memory as good as it is, I could have said it and I don't remember saying it. But the thing is, we get into these situations where somebody says we said this or thought we said that, and there we go. So we've all probably experienced that kind of a conflict, and what do we learn from that? We learn that when something happens, it is always interpreted. You know, I gave the title of my sermon today because, you know what, when I look at the titles that, this is not to be critical here, but sometimes the title that's put on a sermon that I give is much different than what I remember giving. Or it emphasizes something that I thought I said something else, but, you know, they're in the ballpark, but I would probably entitle it something different. And the thing is when something happens, it's always interpreted. For instance, my sermon today. If we were to interview you, we would not all hear the same thing, okay? You'd all have something a little bit different. But you guess what? You all heard the same thing. There's one person speaking up here, but there will be some variance as to what I said. Should we be surprised by that? If we ask you, why did I give the sermon? We'd probably have varying ideas on that too. Even if we ask the title, what's the title? We'd probably have some variance on that, even though I gave it to you, you know, about dealing with conflict. And what we see here is that reasonable people can disagree, not just on issues, but on what the facts really are. Two people can be in the same room. They can witness the same event or hear the same thing and have two completely different versions of what transpired because of their different approaches, because of their different backgrounds. Maybe a matter of just their different abilities to hear. But both are telling the truth as they interpret it. So we make it clear from the beginning that we're there to learn, to appreciate the other's perspective. So when they say, this is what happened, we don't immediately say, well, you obviously are a liar. You obviously don't know what you're talking about. You don't have the ability to think straight. Now, you can say that, but is that going to help conflict resolution? Probably not. Probably not. You know, calling the person an idiot or, and I'm right, is not going to help the situation. And so you have to take a different approach. So we make it clear from the beginning that we want to hear information that the other person has to offer and to seriously consider it. That's a major ground rule. Now, they may be wrong, okay? And their backdrop may cause them to completely misinterpret the situation. This happens all the time. But if there's an atmosphere of mutual respect and the ground rules are that we are brethren, we want to work this situation out, we can work it out. We desire to understand one another, then things can happen in a positive way. So ground rules are very important when it comes to dealing with conflict. And we need to, if we have a conflict, we need to set those ground rules and be willing to listen and to learn and to try to work it out and realize that the way we look at it may be different. So we have to find a way to work this out. You know, it's been found that if there's an accident, two people can be standing on a corner. Both of them are standing there, see an accident, and they'll both see it differently. But you both were on the same corner looking at what happened, and you're describing it differently. That's humanity. So now let's move on to the fourth guideline, which is to focus on fixing the problem. Your goal is to fix the problem. So, as you're thinking about fixing the problem, if you're angry and you're shouting, it's doubtful, one, that you're going to fix the problem. And if you're angry and shouting as you deal with conflict, you're probably not going to be yielding to God's Spirit. So if we come to the point when we feel the only way we can get our point across is by yelling and screaming, something is drastically wrong. Let's go to Colossians 3, which addresses this and the proper approach that we should have. Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. And let's begin in verse 8. Colossians 3, verse 8. But now, you yourselves are to put off all these. You as Christians are to get rid of these things. Anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. These things that we're to put off, if they are present, you know, that's not God's Spirit leading these outcomes of anger and wrath and malice and blasphemy and filthy language. That's not God's Spirit producing that. There might be, you know, as you're looking at anger, there may be some righteous indignation, but I'd say for most of us, it's rare when there's righteous indignation. Mostly, we're just angry. It's not righteous indignation. So as we think about, as we see these things rising up in us, we've got to examine ourselves. Hey, wait a minute. Why am I upset? Why am I acting this way? So as we think back to the ground rules, reasonable people can disagree, but even though they disagree, abusive language should not be allowed. I should not allow myself to be abusive in my speech. Doesn't fit with Christianity. You know, I know, there are people that are unfortunately, are married, and abusive language in their marriage. They're Christians, they come to church, but abusive language is very common in their relationship. How can that take place as Christians? Well, I'm not at church. It doesn't matter. You're standing before God, and aren't you supposed to be the guy pursuing that which is good, pursuing peace? So, going on in verse 9 here, it says, "Do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deeds." You've made a commitment to be a different person. "And have put on the new man, who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who created him." We're to be putting on Christ and becoming like Christ. And I would say that we have a challenge there before us to ensure that our speech is not abusive, which is one of the ground rules. An example here, it talks about in the letter that Mr. Luker and Mr. Rhodes sent, it talks about a petition that was signed by a group of people. And if you look on the internet, it talks about the righteous people signing the petition and the other 300 that didn't as unrighteous, basically. So I'm like, how is that helping as you're accusing each other of not being right in the situation? It doesn't help. It doesn't help in resolving conflict. We understand people are going to see things differently, but working together in a spirit of harmony and love, we can work these things out. So it's important that we indicate in a respectful manner that sometimes people who come with concerns and complaints simply don't have all the facts. So we ask the person to have an open mind, to pause and move back from going off half-cocked, and work together to arrive at a solution. And I would suggest that more often than not, as we are involved in conflict, we spend most of our time trying to prove why I'm right and you're wrong. I'm right, you're wrong. That's what we primarily do. I'm right, and here's why I'm right. I've got 475 points that I'm going to go through every one of them to prove I'm right. Oh, man, I don't want to go through any of your points. And many times we're unwilling to, we're right, and we're not willing to entertain that we could possibly be wrong. I don't want to hear it. Well, there's no communication going on there, and you're not going to resolve your conflict. You may beat the other person down, but you're not going to resolve the conflict. So and that's what everybody seems to be doing. As we look at the church situation, everybody's trying to prove why they're right. And as you think about that, what do we have flying around the internet today? Reams of information trying to prove who is right and who is wrong. And is it helping? No. We're spending all our time proving who's right and wrong. The energy has to be expended on fixing the problem. And I would venture to say it takes a bit of humility to admit you're wrong. And one of the things that stands out in my mind is, when you have a conflict in your marriage or with your children or wherever you find it, sometimes it's good to say, you know what, for the good of everybody, I'm going to back off. I don't have to have my way on this. And take one for the team. Because you see, the team, the church, the body of Christ is more important than me winning. And unfortunately, me winning and my position being the main position we're going to take is what seems to be predominant. And let's take one for the team. I don't have to win on this. I don't have to win on it. But unfortunately, people, as they're motivated by proving they're right, then I have to win. And if you've ever dealt with people in a conflict, there are people that have to win. Have you ever dealt with people like that? And they won't let it go until they win. They'll dog you until you finally just give up. You'll just, okay, fine, You know, I'm going to quit fighting you on this. You know people like that. You may be one of them. But that's not always the best. We have to expend the energy to find a solution. I want to resolve this. I don't want to be fighting and feuding and be in conflict. So we have to think about that in every facet of our life. Do we want to resolve the problem? That's got to be our focus. And we can't get off that. We got to say, what's the problem and how do we fix it? Stay focused on the problem and find a way to fix it. That's your focus. Don't let anything get you off that. The fifth point here is listen with an open mind. Listen with an open mind. I would suggest that because of human nature, we're quick to dismiss information that is contrary to what we believe. We're very quick. Okay, I don't believe that. And we tune out. In some cases, that's understandable. You know, when you hear things that we know go against the truth. Well, I would dismiss that. But sometimes there are things that we don't agree with, but we still need to listen. Many times we're quick to dismiss information from people because, as I said, we don't agree with it. Or the messenger, we feel, doesn't have all the facts. Or we kind of think the messenger's an idiot, so why listen to him in the first place? Or that person may be kind of self-righteous, and here they are up on their high horse here, and I don't want to listen to them. But you know what? That doesn't really help the situation. We need to listen with an open mind. As you go back to the book of Job, you find Job's suffering. Let's go to Job chapter 3, verse 1. He's suffering, and all of his buddies show up, and they're going to spend some time with him. And once they show up, they spend 7 days sitting around with him. Nobody's talking. They just grieve and mourn with him and try to are just there for him to comfort him. So they've spent 7 days sitting there, and then let's look at Job chapter 3, verse 1. Job chapter 3, verse 1. So they've sat there 7 days, and what do we find in verse 1? It says, and after this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. There it is, some really bright words from this guy. First words out of his mouth are negative. They're negative. Saying, I wish I was never born. They're the first words he said in 7 days. So how do you react to a statement like that? How do you react to that? And Job chapter 3 is basically one complaint after another. And so what would you conclude from all that complaining? Obviously, Job's not doing very well. And, Job's sad. He's mourning. He's complaining. He's questioning God. And he wants his time in court to confront God for all that he's going through. Eventually he gets that. So if we dismiss what Job was saying because he was in a bad attitude, we make a serious mistake. So people can come to you in anger. People can come to you in the wrong attitude. People can come to you being highly critical. They can be attacking. They can bring us information we'd want to hear. We don't agree with it. But the challenge we face is to listen. To listen to what they've said with an open mind. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. So we don't want to do that. And if we dismiss what Job is saying because of a bad attitude, then we miss an opportunity to try to resolve the problem. It's hard to say when somebody's so negative, I understand how upset you are, but let's talk about the problem so we can resolve it. It's hard to keep your head. But you have to keep these principles in mind. And yet sometimes, because we as members of the Church of God are very black and white, when we have a conflict, the tendency is to demonize the other party. They're so bad that we obviously can't believe a thing they say. They have no credibility, when that's usually not the case. So both the issue and the event that are being discussed are important to deal with. But we need to listen with an open mind, even if it's handled poorly, even if they've used a wrong word. And so we don't want to attack them and they come and they're negative like Job was and just jump on him. For instance, you know, as you look at Job's friend, let's go to Job chapter 4. Job chapter 4. And as you think about conflict, what's the easiest way to handle it? Well, we can either kill the person verbally, we just, bam, smash them like a fly, and that way it's all gone, or we can literally kill them. Most of us don't do that, but we do. We're quite good at shutting people down verbally. You know, just, bam, I'll take care of this, and you shut down all communication and nobody's going to talk to you. So you've got to keep that open mind. We don't want to do that. But Eliphaz, one of Job's friends, begins talking to Job in chapter 4. And he says, "Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, 'If one attempts a word with you, will you become weary? But who can withhold himself from speaking?'" You know, I've listened to you complain for this whole chapter, and I can't keep my mouth shut any longer. I just can't shut up. And he goes on to say that you've been a person who's, in verses 3 and 4, you've been a person who's gone out and encouraged other people and helped other people when they were facing adversity, but now adversity comes your way and you can't take it. You can't take it. He wasn't giving him much comfort. He didn't listen with an open mind. He basically was not comforting. He didn't say to Job, "You're obviously in agony, you're really hurting, how can I help you? How can I make your situation better?" What he did is he heard all the negative from Job and he reacted. How does that help Job? And it's something we have to keep in mind. So often we've already decided things. We don't listen with an open mind. We hear what we want to hear and we put our focus on the wrong things, which never leads to a resolution. In fact, it makes it worse. So somebody comes to you and there's a conflict, listen with an open mind. Listen to try to hear what they're saying and react accordingly. The sixth guideline that we have is be honest and open. Be honest and open. That is, avoid ambiguity. That is, don't leave things open to more than one interpretation, or leave them in doubt or uncertainty. That doesn't mean being dishonest. And if we don't agree, then we shouldn't imply it in any way. Many times, if we're silent, it can be interpreted to be agreement. Someone makes an outrageous statement, and you don't say anything at all, they'll assume you agree with them. That's just the way things work. And we obviously can't counter every argument, but we need to let them know that you disagree when you disagree. It's important to be clear and honest when we're communicating. And to bring about clarity, we can ask questions like, "So you're saying?" Or, "Let me see if I understand what you're saying," which is a most important part of communication. I know when I hear people that have taken a communication class, you know, that one of the things they tell you to do is repeat back what they've said to you. You pray, if you've been through a communication class, they tell you to do that. So you're having a conflict, and I understand that you feel that I'm yelling at you too much, or you feel, I understand that you want me to start picking up all the clothes that I, when I take them off and put them in the hamper. And that's why you're yelling, because I've been doing that for 40 years. Okay, so you finally reached the tipping point. But I understand what you're saying. And when you say, "Is this what you're saying? Let me understand what you're saying," what you're doing is you're repeating back to them what you've understood them to say. It means you're listening. It means you're telling them you value what they're saying, and you really want to understand it. It's not just some ploy. It's not just some trick that you use in order to get, okay, here, I'm giving this this type of the reactive listening here. That's not what it's about. It's about really listening and hearing what they say. So it means I respect you and want to hear what you have to say and understand it. And what you're saying may make me angry. But I may totally disagree. But I do want to understand what you're saying. That way I can properly interpret it and give a proper response. And, you know, for you to sometimes, you sometimes have to, you know, grit your teeth and you've got to say, okay, I want to understand and force yourself to do this. And it is an honest and open approach that is essential to good communication. Let's go to Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4, verse 25, gives us a most basic element of being a Christian. Ephesians 4, verse 25. Ephesians 4, verse 25. It says, therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. We are the body of Christ. We are the spiritual nation. So we are to speak truth to one another. And it says, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. So he's telling us here that we are to live by this principle of speaking the truth. It's vital that before we say or publish something, we know beyond the shadow of a doubt that it is the truth. Otherwise, we're not following this principle. We could be guilty of spreading falsehoods. We don't want to be doing that. And we're not to let the sun go down on our anger. And it would be appropriate to say that if we're angry for long stretches of time, it's not godly anger. Or it's not. It's our anger, our problem. We should not get so riled up and pulled into something that we're constantly angry. Because what happens is you're angry, you're open to the devil. You're open to Satan. He's found a pathway into your life. To summarize this point, avoid ambiguity and make it clear where you stand. And be willing to be honest with them. The seventh point is this. As you talk to someone, don't count on confidentiality or discretion. Don't count on confidentiality or discretion. I would say that it is the rare person who can truly hold confidences. I hope all of you as church members can do that. We should be people who can do that, but you know it's really hard. If somebody tells you, let me tell you a secret. Once they tell you, it's just burning in your brain and wants to come out. Especially if it's something juicy. You want to share it with other people, don't you? And so you have to realize if you're going to say it or you're going to write it, you better be perfectly happy with them sharing it and expect that it will be shared. This week, somebody wrote to a whole bunch of ministers. I was just one person on the list. And so they said, look, you need to be sharing with your brethren, the people that you pastor, both sides of this. You can give your opinion, and you need to let them know what both sides are so that they can decide which side they're on. So I wrote him back, and I said, I can't do that. My job is to keep the flock together and keep the flock at peace. For me to inject a bunch into the congregation, this side, that side, my side, which may be three sides, so we'd have three groups here, the thing is, that's dividing you. How can I do that as a minister? I don't think I can. In fact, I find that the scriptures tell me that God hates that person who divides. I'm not doing that. So that's what I wrote him back. My wife said, well, you can expect that's going to hit the internet and be spread all over the place. But I didn't say anything which I felt was wrong. But that's how it is. If you write that email, trust me, there's a good chance it may become viral and go all over the place, you know. So be careful. As you talk to somebody in confidence, be very careful. And you be careful in sharing confidences. Do it with great discretion, because you know that it very easily and quickly spreads. A final thing is this: be careful what you say and do afterwards. You have a meeting, you discuss with somebody something with somebody face to face. You have a conflict, you get together, you talk about it. Be careful what you say and do afterwards. So, after a meeting with someone with whom you're in conflict, you may conclude that they're crazy. They're way off base. They've lost control of themselves. They're malicious. They're not credible. And that may be relevant to your own analysis and how you deal with the situation. But if we indicate these feelings, we start telling our friends, well, you know, this guy's just nuts. He went off the deep end, and you can't believe what he said and what he did. Guess what? That, you know, the scriptures tell us that like a little bird, that's going to fly to that person, and they're going to become aware of it. When you relay your feelings about what took place there, other people will hear it. Other people will hear it. So, you know, we tell them they're crazy and they've gone off the deep end. Trust me, they'll probably be talking to you with more conflict about why you call them crazy and going off the deep end. So realize that and watch what you say. So if you speak to somebody, you need to keep that in confidence. Keep it to yourself. Don't make comments to other people, even your friends, because it'll find a way of coming back to you. Just the way it works. So it may be hard to hold it in, your thoughts and your feelings, but it's important to do so. And when I say these things, these are all called ideals. And you can probably be sitting there, well, I know he hasn't done that. I know he hasn't done that. And I'm trying. But we're all imperfect. And we're all trying to learn to better resolve our conflicts. So in conclusion, conflict is inevitable. And I've given you some guidelines to help you in applying Matthew 18. And the guidelines in review are these. Communication is a good thing. Any things that you have to deal with, take it seriously and handle it carefully. As you're dealing with conflict, establish ground rules. Establish ground rules. As you're dealing with it, focus on fixing the problem. Don't allow yourself to be diverted into side issues. Focus on the problem. Fifth point was to listen with an open mind. Don't allow your mind to become closed prematurely. Listen to what they have to say. Be honest and open. It's the sixth guideline. The seventh is don't count on confidentiality or discretion. Don't count on it. Hopefully you have that, but don't count on it. And finally, be careful what you say and do afterwards. So, brethren, we will have conflict, but hopefully what we've talked about today will help you in dealing with that conflict.